Hi, listeners. It's Tucker Ligursky. As a researcher on Masters of Scale, I use the innovations of AI on a daily basis. And with an increasingly overcrowded market, it's hard to discern which ones are truly beneficial for my work, not to mention safe. That's where Grammarly comes in. My job requires me to prepare dozens of documents every day. And with Grammarly, I'm able to make my dossiers and research documents clear, more direct, and more concise. In fact, I recently discovered that Grammarly users spend 66% less time editing content, which is a huge advantage since our most precious resource is undoubtedly time. What I love about Grammarly is its commitment to responsible AI. My team works tirelessly to produce top-quality podcasts, and it's vital that we keep our data secure. Grammarly has been around for 14 years and has maintained a business model dedicated to never selling your data, which means you can trust it with your most sensitive information. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
When I travel for work, I often find myself caught in a blur of meetings and hotel rooms, and I miss out on what the city I'm visiting can offer. I'm sure you can relate. That's exactly why I wanted to recommend a new podcast from our team that changes this paradigm. It's called Offsite Adventures. It turns a simple work trip into an unforgettable adventure. In each episode, we reveal hidden gems in the most iconic business travel destinations. Just search for Offsite Adventures in your favorite podcast player. The show is produced by the same team behind Masters of Scale and presented in alliance with Capital One Business.
I really don't like that people are so obsessed with unicorns. It makes you make a lot of bad decisions. You don't need to be a unicorn. What you really want to be is you want to be a dragon. Dragons are tough, they're independent, they're tenacious. I always wanted to disrupt the gatekeepers of tech. The tech ecosystem does not provide the same opportunities for everyone. We believe that the best investment opportunities are in this untapped potential. This year, we're going to do close to 600 pre-seed investments. We have this massive network of 7,000 alumni, 7,000 mentors, 20,000 investors. You are five times more likely to get to round six of fundraising if you went through Techstars than if you were on your own.
That's Mayel Gavay, CEO of Techstars. Known for its accelerator programs, Techstars is also one of the world's largest pre-seed investors, with more than 3,000 companies having gone through its entrepreneurial boot camps. I'm Bob Safian, former editor of Fast Company, founder of the Flux Group, and host of Masters of Scale Rapid Response. I wanted to talk to Mayel because as valuations for many startups come crashing down, she's criticized the goal of becoming a unicorn company. Instead, she says, businesses should strive to be dragons, resilient enough to withstand difficult times and devotedly loyal to their mission and their customers. Mayel has played a central role in growing diverse startups and scale-ups. Now with Techstars, she's set her sights on remaking the impact of pre-seed investing globally. Mayel's distinctive perch gives her uncommon insight into the current state of the innovation economy, and she shares key lessons on how to navigate our devilishly complex economic environment.
We'll start the show in a moment, after a word from our premier brand partner, Capital One Business.
I woke up in the middle of the night because I had this nightmare that we were front page news, that we've done the stupidest mistake of our life by making this pivot.
That's Aparna Saran, Chief Marketing Officer for Capital One Business. And she's recalling a moment from her previous position at Capital One when she was heading up a team designing a new business card.
We had just made the decision to go all in and sunset the prior version of the product, which was honestly the cash cow for our business. when we made that decision within a senior leadership meeting, as someone who had been on the journey to build this out for 5+ years, it was really exciting. But by the time the weekend hit, I started to feel the responsibility and the pressure. We are taking this big bet on something that I've built.
Perhaps you've been there. You've made a pivotal decision, and then panic sets in. How would Aparna calm her butterflies and steer her team through this pivot? We'll find out later in the show. It's all part of the Refocus Playbook, a special series where Capital One Business highlights stories of business owners and leaders using one of Reed's theories of entrepreneurship. Today's playbook insight: have multiple plan Bs.
I'm Bob Safian, and I'm here with Mael Gavay, CEO of Techstars. Mael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Bob. It's such a pleasure to be here with you today.
I reached out to you because you recently wrote on LinkedIn about the state of tech and unicorns. You're responding to some news about the unicorn minting is waning. And you had a comment about it being better to focus on dragons than on unicorns. I feel like we're in Game of Thrones land here a little bit, but tell me what you're thinking, why you wrote this, and where you feel like we are.
So just for the record, I'm actually a big fan of Game of Thrones, but that was not the reason why. It all started a few weeks ago. We had our LP annual general meetings, and I was having a conversation with Brad Feld, one of the three co-founders of Techstars, about whether or not we should talk about the number of unicorns that Techstars has invested in and supported. By the way, it's 22. And that got me thinking, the number of unicorns that any investors makes is like one of these really key numbers that people focus on. And it's completely artificial because most of them are paper valuation. And as we've seen last year, this is a valuation that is not supported. And it also has negative consequences because as an entrepreneur, to get big fast, to grow at all cost, it makes you make a lot of bad decisions. I was talking to our entrepreneurs and telling them, don't be a one-trick pony. You don't need to be a unicorn. What you really want to be is you want to be a dragon. Dragons are tough. They're almost invincible. They're independent. They're tenacious. And they may not be as pretty as unicorns, but I think for an entrepreneur, that feels like a much better animal to try to emulate.
Now, in a business sense, being a unicorn basically just means you're valued by someone at $1 billion or more, which is an achievement and I guess a marker that companies strive for. So what is the business characteristic of a dragon?
In the world of business, being a dragon means that you need to be able to resist any challenges, any economic downturn. They tend to have really good unit economics. They tend to be very loyal. Again, back to Game of Thrones, if you watched it, you know that the dragons were extremely loyal. When you think about dragons in a business sense, I see entrepreneurs who are very loyal to a problem, very loyal to a customer need. They go through battles to solve these problems.
At this point in the cycle, and for a lot of tech companies, certainly, the idea of becoming a unicorn, like the valuations got far ahead of themselves. When you're looking at companies you're going to bring into the Techstars fold, how do you differentiate between the hope, right, the potential, and the hype?
To start with, we invest extremely early. So we invest at a time where it can literally be like two people and a dog and an idea that seems really exciting. The second thing is we make a lot of investments. This year, we're going to do close to 600 pre-seed investments. And because of that, we're highly diversified. Like we don't follow a specific trend. We don't really have the fear of missing out because we invest across all countries and all type of industries. And then the last thing is we also have a very different model because we provide a lot more than just capital. I'm an entrepreneur myself, and I remember being in so many rooms with venture capitalists promising me the moon, the stars, and everything in between, besides obviously the check that they were generously going to give us. And I can count on half a hand the number of venture capitalists who, after they invested in my company, actually provided support and really, really make a difference in my company. Techstars, not only we provide capital, but then we have programs. Think about it as 3 months intense entrepreneurship boot camp. And then after the 3 months, we have a lot of services for you, starting from helping you to fundraise, to helping you hire new talents for your team, connecting you with potential corporate clients, et cetera, et cetera. We have this massive network of 7,000 alumni, 7,000 mentors, 20,000 investors who have made an investment in Techstars company. And so because of all of that, we provide a very different investment strategy, far, far, far away from all the hype that I can sometimes see in the media.
And the 600 pre-seed investments that you're making this year, have all of those businesses been through one of your accelerator programs?
They all have to go through the program. When we look at their trajectory, our program makes a huge difference. You are 5 times more likely to get to round 6 of fundraising if you went through Techstars than if you were on your own.
So you joined Techstars in 2021. So less than 2 years ago, you came on board. What appealed to you about the opportunity?
There were really 3 things that got me beyond excited about Techstars. The first one was I love working with entrepreneurs. We have now 3,300 and counting companies we have invested in. The second one is I'm a capitalist. I believe deeply that entrepreneurship is a force of good, a force of progress, and a key driver of value creation for humanity. And I like to make money. I like to make money for myself. I like to make money for the people around me. I like to see successful entrepreneurs who create generational wealth for themselves and for their family and for their employees. And then the last one, which was very, very personal, was this desire to disrupt the gatekeepers of tech. I've been working in tech now for well over 15 years. And it is very clear that the tech ecosystem does not provide the same opportunities for everyone. And I wanted to change that. And for the last 3 years, we had over 25% of the companies we invested in were led by women. When you look at successful Black and Latino founders in the US of the last 4 years, Techstars has backed more of them than any other investor. We're not a D&I or ESG investor. We think of ourselves as a universal investor. We want our portfolio to represent the world as it is because we believe that the best investment opportunities are in this untapped potential.
Are there ways that Techstars is different today than it was when you got there?
When I joined, Techstars mostly focused on being a really great accelerator. Accelerators are great, but they're mean to an end. What we are first and foremost is we are the largest pre-seed investor in the world. And we need to own that. We need to grow that.
So you mentioned this, Techstars is a very broad network, 3,300 and growing businesses. What are you hearing from these portfolio companies about the current economic climate right now?
I speak to our entrepreneurs every day. Most of them are first-time founders. It's not like they've done that for 10 years. So most of them have never seen a crisis, let alone seen a crisis while managing a business. And I am constantly amazed by the level of maturity, how they approach to cash preservation, to how this is a great opportunity for hiring because suddenly they are going to get access to talent that beforehand were completely pulled out of the market by the Facebook, Google of this world. It is very clear right now that B2B businesses seem to feel the pain a lot more than B2C businesses. A lot of big corporations have already started taking measures to reduce cost in Q2 of this year. I would expect that in the B2C market, it's going to come. And then the other thing, I see more and more entrepreneurs tackling bigger problem than ever because of the economic downturn. They're like, humanity is facing massive problems and I am going to solve it, which I find fascinating because when I started in tech 15 years ago, it felt like it was a lot about, I want to make my life easier. And now it's like, I want to solve a problem which is going to change the entire world. You see that a lot in food tech and agrotech. You see that a lot in health tech to climate change and sustainability in Africa and the Middle East. And so there's pockets of incredible innovation and drive that gives me a lot of hope, even though I expect that 2023 and probably 2024 are going to be very difficult.
Do you see your entrepreneurs sort of struggling with like how much to pull back versus how much to lean in? I mean, we had the news of Meta laying off 11,000 people, and it makes you think, well, how much you need to sort of right-size your business or keep your powder dry? Are those conversations that they bring to you?
Definitely. The conversation is usually around this trade-off. How much do you need to restrain hiring or even, unfortunately, doing some layoff? And at the same time, a lot of them are actually very excited by what's happening because they are going to be able to hire the talents that were not available. If you were a small startup a year ago and you were trying to hire a chief product officer or a chief technology officer or a strong head of digital marketing, it was so expensive that a lot of the startups we had invested in were saying to us, I don't think I can hire the right level of talent. For better and for worse, this is about to change. And it's a positive for the small startup because I think they're going to finally be able to afford to recruit the people that they need to get to the next level.
Is there a framework that you suggest in sort of approaching this question about balancing the risk in this moment and the potential opportunity?
What we usually talk to them about is, one, you need to be obsessed about your cash burn and how much run rate you have, because there is nothing you can do if you're about to run out of money. So you need to focus on that first. If you find yourself in a position where you think that you're going to be fine for another 18 months, 24 months, depending on the credit line that you have and the type of shareholders that you have, then it's the time to think, okay, is there opportunities for me to leverage the crisis? And we both know there are a lot of businesses out there who did fantastically well during a crisis because they were able to invest when their competitors were not. So we just go through that process. One, let's look at your cash burn run rate. If you are in an uncomfortable position, that's what you need to focus on. Two, if you are in a much better position, let's start thinking about what are the one or two areas which are going to make a huge difference in your business. And then be very quick at iterating. What I've learned having had to deal with this kind of crisis a few years ago is that the key is to be very focused and very agile. You have to be constantly reevaluating your decisions because the environment keeps changing.
We'll be back in a moment after a word from our premier brand partner, Capital One Business.
There was panic that set in that night because I didn't want to let people down.
We're back with Aparna Saran of Capital One Business. She was recalling the time she woke up in a cold sweat, terrified that the new product she had been working on might fail. So the next morning, she sat down and wrote an email.
It was Sunday morning, and I said, you know what? I'm going to just like share this with my peers. It was very emotional. It was like sort of a cry for help.
Aparna realized that if the new product didn't take off, she needed a plan B, preferably multiple plan Bs.
I'm inviting them to be the thought partners so that we are mitigating as much risk as possible and we have contingency plans in place as we make this move. You write something like this and your heart is pounding, should I send this? It was a super vulnerable moment for me. But then I was like, I'm going to just send this. Like, what's the worst that'll happen? It can't be worse than being on the front page of the newspaper.
So she held her breath and hit send. What happened next would surprise even her. We'll hear about that later in the show. It's all part of Capital One Business's Spotlight on Business Leaders, following Reed's Refocus Playbook.
Before the break, we heard Techstar CEO Mael Gavay talk about the top priorities for businesses navigating economic crisis. Now, she shares what she learned from running a business inside Russia and the difference between being a wartime CEO and a peacetime CEO. She also shares lessons about the difference between innovating in a big company and a startup, the key questions she asks every prospective new founder, and why having friends and family to lean on is so important to business success. Your entrepreneurial background includes experience with a bunch of places that are hotspots right now, business and culture-wise. You first came on my radar when you were CEO of an e-commerce business in Russia, the Amazon of Russia, we used to call it. Do you have any insights on the business environment there, or how the economic and political factors from the West and the war are impacting either way?
Through Techstars, we are exposed to the conflict because we have quite a few investments with Ukrainian entrepreneurs. Ukraine has a very strong technological background and a lot of really strong engineers. And unfortunately, I've heard a lot of heartbreaking story because there's so much talent and so much innovation that has been put on hold because of this senseless war.
A lot has changed in 8 years from the time that you were in Moscow, right?
Totally. This is where I learned to deal with my first massive economic crisis. I was the CEO of Ozone. I was there in 2014 when Russia annexed Crimea. And I remember very distinctively at the time, we went from 30 rubles to the dollar to 100 rubles to the dollar. And as an e-commerce, you would pay everything in dollars because a lot of the product that we would sell would be imported. And yet we would sell them to the Russian population in rubles. And so, like, dealing with a massive currency devaluation, obviously the sanctions that happened at the time that put a lot of pressure on any import activities were a very, very good school for me in terms of learning to deal with major economic situations. And I see a lot of parallels with the current situation, which is, if not every day, every week, there is something happening. The Fed is increasing the rates. There is more layoff. There is the midterms election in the US. And so you keep adding level of complexities and you keep changing the environment that as an entrepreneur, you have to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, one of the often lessons for entrepreneurs and business people is to focus on what you can control. And yet when the macro environment keeps moving around so much, more of your business becomes out of your control.
Exactly. And I think that's the biggest lessons for entrepreneurs is you have to embrace the uncertainty. During economic crisis like the one we're going through right now, the uncertainty becomes even bigger. And what is going to differentiate a successful entrepreneur from a less successful entrepreneur is the ability to deal with a heightened level of uncertainty.
When you left Russia, you then went and led global operations for Priceline. So you've been inside the travel and hospitality industry, which has had its own tumultuous period over the last 2 years. Then you worked in the real estate business as the chief operating officer at Compass, another sort of seesaw industry. Do you like volatility? Is that, are you drawn to that?
I'm a fixer. What I do for a living is fixing and scaling companies. And so every single one of these businesses that you've just mentioned, that was that. When I joined Compass, we had 5 offices, 300 employees, and I guess about 1,000 agents. And when I left, we had 350 offices, probably even a little more than that, 15,000 agents and well over 2,000 employees. And that was like a little over 2 years.
And so if Techstars has 3,300 companies today, I should expect that it will be like 70x that a few years from now? I mean, is that same scale, passion or plan part of what you see for Techstars?
There are so many unstoppable and unbelievable founders everywhere. And to me, there is an opportunity to make a lot more investment. We've been talking about making several thousand investments a year. This year, we are going to make close to 600 investments. And I'm very, very much hoping that we'll be doing a lot more than that in the next 5 to 10 years. Yes.
I had a guest on the show recently who was arguing that women leaders have a different style, a different approach that make them better leaders for the environment that we're in now than traditional male leadership. Do you see advantages in certain approaches?
When I was running Ozone in Russia, and a person asked me, what does it feel to be a female leader? And I looked at her and asked her, what do you mean? And she said, but I assume that as a woman leading a company is different. And I remember not knowing what to say because I had never thought about it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I have a company. I go to work every day and I try to do the best I can. And I came to the conclusion that I didn't know what it meant to be a female leader. I only knew what it meant to be a leader. Every man and every woman was different in the way they lead. There are definitely men and women who are much better during crisis time than others. I mean, we talk regularly about war CEO versus peace CEO. These are usually two very different type of people. I'm just not sure that gender has much to do with that.
What makes for a good war CEO versus a good peace CEO? And I'm assuming you're sort of feeling like we're in a time of war now.
We are definitely in a wartime right now. A war CEO is someone who is very comfortable with uncertainty, back to what we were discussing earlier. Someone who is capable to switch very quickly between defensive and offensive all the time. Because sometimes you need to preserve cash and sometimes you need to invest. So war CEO tend to be people who are more likely to take risk, but are capable of making decision, big decision with partial information. So that makes them very different than CEO who are more there to maintain a status quo, making sure that all the right things are in place. Foundations are very robust. The business is humming. We need both. The world needs both type of CEO. What is important is that you match the profile of the CEO with what the business is facing at the moment.
We talk about founders a lot on Masters of Scale, but we also talk about entrepreneurial thinking at scaled organizations, about accelerating growth in already established businesses. You've worked on both ends of that. Is one of them harder than the other? Startup versus accelerating a scaled business?
I've done both and I liked both. I have very consciously decided to not be an entrepreneur for the fourth time because it is gruesome to go through the 0 to 1. And I love working with the entrepreneurs we support, but it feels good to be advising them and mentoring them, being in the trenches with them, but not being the one doing the 0 to 1.
I remember having this conversation with Daniel Ek at Spotify, asking him about like what the hardest stage has been. And he said, it's always the next stage. You know, the next stage is the hardest stage, which makes it sound like the early stage is easier, almost like that founders are like over-dramatizing how hard it is. But when I listen to you, it sure doesn't sound like it. You sound like going back to that 0 to 1 feels pretty painful to try to jump into.
The blessing and the curse of an entrepreneur is that every day is different. Every day brings a new high, but also a new low very often. And it can happen within an hour. You don't have the infrastructure, the support, if you are suddenly a $100 billion public company. Now, some entrepreneurs will tell you, every day is new and every day is my day. I decide what I want to do with my day. And other people will tell you that they prefer to have a slightly more structured environment with a lot more infrastructure and platform around them. I think it really depends on your personality and what you're good at.
And I guess being a founder is not necessarily for everyone. And for some people, being inside a bigger organization is just confining.
The first thing I push back on with the young entrepreneurs is the idea that you are going to be successful almost overnight. And one of the key questions I asked them, are you ready to spend the next 10 years of your life going through a roller coaster of emotions because you believe so much in that problem? And if the entrepreneur says to me, 10 years? No, I think I can do it in 5. I usually tell them that they are probably in the wrong job because it will take them about 10 years. And that's if they're successful. Less than 1% of startups which get funded at the pre-seed level will actually be successful. But then I also push back on people who say, oh, you cannot be innovative. You can't be an entrepreneur if you work in a big company. There are absolutely large companies where it is totally impossible because you have to follow the rules and all the approval processes. But there are absolutely companies where you can come up with a new idea, run it, own the P&L, go to the board and get the next stage of funding.
Yeah, I sometimes think about businesses that they're like families, you know, and every family is different. And sure, we might apply some broad things that say, oh, they're like this or they're like that. But when you get inside them, every one of these businesses is different and you have to find one that fits you, your needs, and, you know, and what your goals are.
When you build a team, when you want to be part of a team, you need to think about, is that the right sport for me? But also, do I fit well in this team? Do my skills complement everyone else in the team? And good coaches, the same way good CEO do, good coaches are actually very mindful about the team dynamic and how it plays with each other. And I think about it in the exact same way when I mentor entrepreneurs. I'm like, look at the business you're joining. First of all, is that a sport you want to play? Okay, is that an industry you want to be in? And then second, look at the team you're joining. Is that the team that you want to be part of? Because it's going to be a lot of training, a lot of time spent together, some victories, but also some failures. Are these the people that you want to spend time with? And are you going to help them be better? And are they going to help you be better?
Do you have advice for entrepreneurs who are in the trenches right now about how they keep themselves stable, focused, agile enough, but not distracted?
I usually tell our entrepreneurs, one, be very, very clear on your priorities. And you can't have more than two or three. Like, you need to be waking up every morning thinking, this is what I'm trying to achieve. And anything that does not help you achieve this goal, you need to be ruthless and say no to them. Learning to say no is really, really important. And then I tell them, no one succeeds alone, ever. You need to have people who are ready to be with you in the trenches, whether it is your team, your investors, your board. And then the last thing, never, ever, ever forget about their friends and family, because business is important. And if you're an entrepreneur, that can be an all-consuming endeavor. And the reality is, this is a marathon. This is not a sprint. And the best way to win that marathon is to be surrounded by people who are here to help you from a business perspective, but who are also here to support you just as a human being.
Well, Mael, that was great. And thank you for joining the Messer Scale family here and helping keep us grounded and for spending your time with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And now, a final word from our brand partner, Capital One Business.
Throughout the day, text messages and emails kept pouring in. Whatever you need, just let us know.
We're back one more time with Aparna Saran of Capital One Business. She was telling us about a Sunday morning email she fired off in a moment of panic. Minutes later, her inbox was overflowing. And the support she found wasn't just emotional, it was practical.
We talked about detailed contingency plans and we created our go-to-market strategy before we are in full rollout mode. We had stage gates so that we could test and quickly learn and iterate. And within a matter of like 6 months, as we were rolling things out channel by channel, those stage gates would allow us to pivot if we saw something that we didn't like.
That day, Aparna learned a lesson that stayed with her. Having multiple plan Bs doesn't just expand your options. It gives you new opportunities.
The best way to pivot is actually open doors for thoughtful conversations, because humility in knowing that you actually don't know everything, as well as the empathy in knowing that disruption is always drastic and abrupt, helps you go through that pivot with other people in a very different way.
Capital One Business is proud to support entrepreneurs and leaders working to scale their impact from Fortune 500s to first-time business owners. For more resources to help drive your business forward, visit CapitalOne.com/businesshub. That's CapitalOne.com/businesshub.
Masters of Scale Rapid Response is a Wait What original. It's hosted by me, Bob Safian, Masters of Scale's editor-at-large. Masters of Scale host is Reid Hoffman. Our executive producers are June Cohen, Darren Triff, and Jordan McLeod. Our head of content and production is Lori Hoffman. Our producer is Marie McCoy Thompson. Scripts by Alex Morris and Tucker Ligursky. Our music director is Ryan Holiday. Original music and sound design by Eduardo Rivera. Audio editing by Keith J. Nelson, Stephen Davies, Andrew Nault, and Mike Gallagher. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli. Special thanks to Adam Skuse, Catherine Clark Gray, Emily McManus, Adam Heiner, Colin Howarth, Tim Cronin, Kelsey Capitano, Sammy Aputa, Anna Pizzino, Sarah Tartar, Leah Saramedis, Charlie Meneses, Chinemia Zequena, Aria Finger, and Saida Sapieva. Visit mastersofscale.com/rapidresponse to find the transcript for this episode, and please subscribe to our email newsletter. Become a member of Masters of Scale to get access to a year's worth of courses and content on the Masters of Scale Courses app. Find out more at mastersofscale.com/membership.